Welcome to Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium, a podcast for fiber artists and producers. I'm your host, Madeline Rosenberg, and this is the first podcast that I am recording on my new laptop because my old laptop finally gave out, and the external hard drive on which I had backed up all of the podcast, all of it forever, all the way back, died. It's gone. It goes whir, click, whir, click. Whir, click, 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 which is the electronic signal for flatline. This was supposed to be just right January. I had such high hopes. 2018 ended with me organized, planned, and ready to implement. I did my morning yoga for 2 days. Then I had to take a break because my sprained ankle wasn't strong enough yet, and my neck was unhappy as well. Isn't Hatha supposed to be the gentlest yoga? I don't know, maybe I can't even handle gentle. Then I got a cold, which I babied so it wouldn't turn into a sinus infection or an ear infection, and I thought I was on the tail end of it when we went to the ASI convention in New Orleans last weekend, but I was wrong. I partied at Walgreens, purveyor of fine NyQuil. While I may not have been vocal this month, I have been listening to all of the conversations bombarding me from every direction. I'm going through a very low point. I feel powerless, helpless, useless, inconsequential. Things are happening in my family life that have radically shifted my day-to-day schedule, my relationships, our finances, and have brought up all the feels. I haven't been sleeping. I'm disappointed in myself for not being able to follow through with all the great plans I had at the end of the year. I've been spinning yarns for my virtual shepherds and knitting items as well, and feeling bad because they aren't done, but defensive because virtual shepherding doesn't convey how busy I am all the time. But busyness without income is confusing to me, and I find it difficult to justify my career. I spent money to upgrade my website and promote my products via Instagram, but it's not working. I can't tag anything. If anyone can help me with that, please reach out, because it's driving me crazy. And my website host person thing says they can't help me because it's not their product. And the Facebook business manager, I mean, everything appears to be fine. Aria says hi. But I don't know how to make things work. I'm a Luddite. I'm worried about lambs and kids coming in 8 weeks without land to support them. I'm behind sending fleeces to the mill because we don't have the money for processing, so I'm worried I won't have enough roving and yarns to make it through festival season, but I don't even know which festivals I'm going to apply to. Then there's all the other stuff. We all know how political social media is. I'm guilty of perpetuating some of that, although I try to be judicious. We all are. I've been unfriended, and I've gained followers. It's funny how people will decide they know you on the basis of a single post and use you as their champion, sort of a human algorithm. Like, if she supports A, she definitely feels X about B. But it couldn't be further from the truth. I'm not partisan. I don't believe in a two-party system. So I post from and am willing to hear out both sides. There are liars, extremists, and ostriches on both sides. And all media is biased. Here's where I'm going to lose some of you. Please try to hang on to your two flat ones and packets of gravel till the end. There are no credible sources beyond secondhand information. In other words, unless you're talking to someone who experienced something firsthand, don't believe it. My grandmother used to say, don't believe anything you hear and only half of what you see. I'm talking about politics, but also the Instagram witch hunt in progress. It's a racist version of the Red Scare, and it is stunning, to say the least. We've gone from being the most inclusive community to accepting the same labels, schisms, exclusions, and shame as the rest of our society. Shame indeed. Shame on all of you who are perpetuating such behavior. You open your feed and you read a post from someone who's incensed and appalled. They reference another account that's either shut down, private, or you can't find the original material. They summarize their view of what they saw or read or heard, and then they give you their point of view. You're now biased. Even when you seek the origin and watch the video or read that post, you are subconsciously seeking validation of the first opinion to which you were exposed. So again, unless you have firsthand, direct, unbiased contact with whatever the situation or person is, you should refrain from reposting. At the American Sheep Industry Board of Directors meeting, one of our speakers was Representative Mike Conaway of Texas. He worked hard for the Farm Bill. He seems like a nice man, a man who genuinely tries to do his best at his job. He's most definitely partisan, white, affluent, and Christian. He told us, not his constituents, but members of the agricultural community, and he sits on the agricultural committee, that the media's job is to entertain, not inform. He said their profitability depends on ratings, and they get ratings by making us angry, because the angrier we are, the more we watch. On that point, I agree with a Republican. My advice in this regard is simple and unpopular. Stop feeding the machine. Stop consuming media. Stop looking for things about which to be angry. Focus instead on being the world you want to see. Not the change you want to see, as the old quote goes. You want equality and inclusivity? Embody it. You want a feed full of positive messages? Start one. You want to fight the power? Turn your back on the tools of propaganda. I was asking myself the questions the community's asking now more than a year ago. Where are all the black knitters, weavers, and fiber producers? And as soon as I asked the question, I started to see them. I added them to my social media feeds. I sold yarn to them. I sorted fleeces with them. I promoted their farms. They promoted mine. I didn't form these connections to prove a point or add to my BIPOC friend count. It's not a race thing. It's about valuing one another's work. You know who didn't ask what my drop spindle was in New Orleans? An Icelandic woman and several Indian people, because spinning is integral to their cultures. They acknowledged my craft, and either that was it, or we talked about our experiences with different natural fibers. No big deal. No post needed to prove it. In fact, I've wanted to do podcasts with many people of color, but guess what? I received two responses. A, I don't feel I'm the right person for this. Or B, no response at all despite multiple attempts. I'm tired of this war. As a woman of mixed ethnicities, I no longer know whether I'm supposed to be apologizing for looking white or demanding guilt from everyone whiter than I am. Is it white privilege if I choose not to speak? But isn't it person of color privilege to speak? And isn't that the beauty of social media? We're all equal. We all get to craft our voice, our presence, and our people will find us. A certain woman of color that I follow, but frequently consider unfollowing due to her hostility, complained that one cannot be successful on social media unless one is thin, white, and pretty. Instead of focusing on what you aren't, why not focus on your brand and your message? If you do your best work, people will come to it. If not, it doesn't matter how thin and rich you are, you'll fade as quickly as you rose to fame. Besides, as Carrie Fisher said, fame and fortune rarely go hand in hand. I saw a non-hetero cisgender person of Pan-Asian heritage complain that her preferred yarn shop is 80% white. Well, choose a different yarn shop or, and I know this is a crazy idea, ask them to host an event specifically for non-hetero individuals or persons who share your ethnicity or whatever group you want to see in the yarn shop. I've never met a fiber person who would turn you down, although I'm sure there's one out there probably in a southern state. Chances are, if you aren't seeing something, it's on you, not on everyone else. People of color are active in the fiber community all over the world. They raise sheep and goats, they have podcasts, they knit, they design, they reclaim textiles. Find them where everything else is sold. Hashtags. Just start looking and stop shaming. When we highlight differences between people, we separate ourselves from them. Creating otherness is the first step to genocide. Of course, we know there are many steps and we can stop anywhere along the way. So stop now. Stop it. Stop focusing on the differences. I opened my IG feed to post a picture of my delicious beignet, and I was assaulted by two back-to-back posts that literally made my stomach flip. I'll just talk about one. It was from a designer of color with whom I was looking forward to working. However, her tirade made it clear that I was unwelcome because I'd chosen not to use certain non-fiber-related hashtags in my posts. It's her right to have opinions and feelings and to curate her own feed. I support that. I'd like to point out, however, that her ultimatum of, quote, "I'm systematically unfollowing anyone who is white and doesn't use XYZ in your post," unquote, is actually turning her into what she preaches against. She's becoming racist. All the exclusion and compartmentalization I've taken in has had its intended effect. I'm at a point where I don't feel like I fit in with anyone. I don't belong with my generation. I'm not black enough or white enough. I'm not urban or even suburban, but I didn't grow up on a farm. I'm socially awkward. I hate to stand out. It's difficult to connect with people, and they don't understand how much courage and effort it takes for me to approach them. This makes representing my state at a national convention extremely challenging. Last year was my first. I went by myself, and maybe people treated me a little kinder because of that. This year I took Alex, people I assumed I, like all but seven other women, had married into the sheep industry, that he was the shepherd. When I said I was a state director, they assumed I was in the Make It With Wool program, because that's where all the women are. When I answered, "How many ewes do you run?" with 60 total head, most of them backed out of the conversation. And God help me for raising primitives, natural colored sheep, and niche marketing. As immediate past president Mike Korn stated in the board of directors meeting, "Those hobby farmers are fine, but we real sheep men are extremely busy." Seriously? Not everyone has 40,000 acres on which to run several tens of thousands of heads of merinos. We can't all be sixth generation in the industry, and as long as that attitude remains industry standard, you're not going to attract the new blood you claim to want and need. I looked around the room in each meeting and at every meal. I was the most ethnically diverse person. There's a few men of Basque heritage, but not many. Aria, you weren't there. I was one of 8 female state representatives out of, I think, 40 represented states. It's an organization of old white Republican men, but I know that's not an accurate representation of the sheep industry. Alex wasn't impressed either. He said the association really needs to split into East and West, those with thousands of head of flock and those who, like us, have limited land and therefore limited numbers, tens to hundreds maybe. Trying to discuss our needs alongside the big boys is like comparing apples and bowling balls. I'm not sure if I can continue as state rep or even in the sheep industry. Then again, if people like me don't sit at the table, the reign of the old white man continues until they all die off and then there's nothing. Look up your state organization and join. Participate on the board. Ask to be your state ASI rep. Come to the convention in Scottsdale, Arizona next January. Clara Parks came to this one. You can come too. All are welcome, at least that's what they say, and I would love to see people of every shade of brown from one end of the room to the other. And yeah, it's a little expensive, but it gives you a seat at the table, and you get a bigger picture, you know, kind of an overview on a national level of what's going on with sheep. I'm so tired of fighting for the fiber community, and I don't want to fight with you. Maybe I'm fooling myself and my seat at the table is really in the back of the room where no one can hear me for everyone else screaming. Next time we can unpack the positives. I recorded a couple of speakers and a producer from Arizona, so I'll be editing that audio to share. One virtual shepherd will soon be receiving yarn and another their long-awaited knitted items. And the third in our How to Show Sheep series available on our Patreon at patreon.com/Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium. Will be listed as we move into February and colder temperatures. Colder indeed. The temperature has been falling since sunset yesterday. I'm not complaining much. I'd rather have our wind chill of negative 10 than others negative 50. This cold this winter is not a negative thing. Sure, it requires more management, more feed, more clothing, and some compromise. It also kills parasites and bacteria. It builds character and it makes us feel like badasses. It's hard, man, I'm not gonna lie. But it's a mental challenge. We like to believe we're in charge, and in a world where we individually feel control slipping away, a polar vortex is just one more slap in the face. We control nothing. I'm being bombarded with the bring them in posts. It's neither feasible or reasonable. We don't have a barn, and I've been feeling bad about that, but after seeing the trouble others are having keeping their sheep in the barn, and remembering that disease thrives in moist, warm, close quarters, I'm actually relieved. Windchill didn't stop Mr. Ballyhoo from doing his usual morning chores, nor me from 2.5 hours of extra chores, and it won't stop us from feeding again tonight. I didn't even put on my snowsuit. It's honestly not that bad as long as you're in the sun. The sheep were scattered around the pasture, the horses dozing in the run-in. The goats had snow on their backs this morning. For those of you who don't raise animals, snow on an animal's back is a sign that they're well insulated. They have enough body heat to maintain homeostasis and enough barrier to prevent snow from melting and dripping down against the skin. This is true of all animals, not just sheep, so stop panicking about people's snowy dogs. I am very cognizant that our indoor pet dogs are not acclimated to these temperatures. Frostbite can occur in as little as 30 minutes exposure, so I don't let their paws touch the ground outside any longer than that. They don't wear coats, they don't get wet, and they weren't shivering today. Snickers, however, is showing signs of arthritis, so she came in and got cozy under a blanket before time was up. Eula and Oscar are different. They're cold weather breeds who live outdoors year-round, and they're acclimated to outdoor temperatures. They have adequate shelter from the wind and snow, but I can't force them to use it, nor to finish their food, nor drink the warm water I schlepped out there specifically for them. The sheriff, the ASPCA, and all the internet bleeding hearts combined could not convince Eula or our geese that lying in the snow isn't a good idea. I opened the coop this morning because I remembered that wind chill doesn't count if they're out of the wind, so it raises the temperature. The first thing these silly geese did was flop down and take a snow bath. First and foremost, I won't bring Eula in because our dogs got skunked the other night. I dare you to tell me it'd be a good idea to drag an outdoor dog indoors into the shower, bathe her after dark, and then toss her back outside. So since she reeks of skunk, no indoors for her. Second, remember the hot weather warnings? How if you go outside, you should stay outside because going into air conditioning and then back out is actually harder on your body? Well, the same applies to outdoor dogs in the cold. Trying to regulate 60-degree swings in temperature is not easy or fair for their bodies. It's better that they stay outside. One animal did come in today. He may go back out later, if he's dry enough. And for once, we're fortunate that we have a drafty old house with weird ductwork and multiple temperature zones. Percy is safe in the 59-degree bathroom. What happened is that I went outside to give warm water to the goats, Eula, Oscar, the peacocks, and all the other poultry, one handheld bucket at a time. Yes, it took forever. No, not everyone appreciated my labor. It's a labor of love. And, yeah. Anyway, I filled this pan that we leave out for the Muscovy ducks, who come and go as they please and can't be corralled or cooped up, and Percy stuck his head out of the bushes to eat. So I said good morning and complimented him on finding a spot out of the wind and snow. Only as I was waddling back to the house for yet another bucket of H2O, I noticed he didn't look right. At first I thought maybe he'd been attacked by the skunk, because it looked like feathers were missing. I could see the red skin of his neck. As I knelt beside him, I realized every feather on his body was completely coated in ice. Let's pause so I can explain how ducks work. All waterfowl, really. They spend the majority of their time preening. Far from being vain, their specialized body structure requires constant maintenance. We'll just stick with Percy as our example, but if you'd rather picture a goose or a penguin, feel free. Percy wakes up every morning and he takes a bath. This helps loosen old feathers, cleans dirt and grime off, and it may be the only time that water gets to his skin. After making sure his entire body is washed, he'll start preening. That's that funny movement they do with their beaks where it looks like they're biting themselves. He's actually pulling out the loose feathers, making sure every feather overlaps correctly, and most importantly, He's drawing oil from a gland at the base of the shaft down each feather, waterproofing it. Go find an HD photo of a bird and check out the numbers of feathers in one small area, even of their face. Peacocks are an especially brilliant choice. This oiling is what allows waterfowl to float, dive, swim in the winter, and retain air between their feathers, as in the case of penguins who release this air underwater for bursts of speed when hunting or being hunted. Okay, so back to Percy. Literally, he was crunching. He was so frozen. Ducks are not supposed to shiver. I thought he would be happy to receive my assistance, but no. Again, I have no control and nobody cares. And when a 15-pound male bird says no, he means it. I took a wingsicle to the eye. Anyway, I got him into a kennel full of hay and I brought him into the house. I hear you asking why I didn't just set a heat lamp on him. We don't have any. They cause more problems than they solve. Why didn't I drag a hairdryer out there? Too great a disparity in temperature. Isn't it dangerous to bring him in the house? Well, I didn't have the kennel ready when I found him, so I had to chuck him in the small chicken coop for a little while. He was out of the wind, thereby increasing the ambient temperature at least 10 or 15 degrees. Then he sat in the house by the drafty back door where it was 59 degrees, more or less, and he drank some warm water. That raised his internal temperature a little bit. Then I put him in the bathtub in a couple inches of lukewarm water, and he bathed and flapped and preened until all the ice melted, which actually didn't take that long. At one point, he stood directly under the spigot of warm water, which wouldn't have been my choice, but he knows best. The point was, I warmed him gradually, and after I'm satisfied that he's completely dry, we'll reverse the process. I'll put him in our very cold laundry room, then on the screen porch, then in the main coop for the night where the body heat of the other birds will keep him warm. This brutal and blessedly temporary cold is an exercise in trust. You and I can't imagine surviving outdoors because, well, we wouldn't. The animals can and do as long as they have what they need. This is where we have to be passive shepherds. We have to listen so when we act, we do so appropriately. If the animals don't want to be in, don't force them. If they're shivering and vocalizing, they need more shelter. It doesn't have to be fancy. If they have food left over, they're fine. If the feeders or the water bucket are empty in 10 minutes, as they were in the chicken coop, fill them up. Pay attention to the young, who don't know what to ask for, and the old, who are unlikely to complain. I posted a photo of a bandaged lamb a couple of weeks ago. She's better, but she's still missing some wool, and she doesn't have the good sense to stay in her well-bedded hut. Half an hour to frostbite, folks. So this morning, I had to bring her into the bathroom because my layers of t-shirts idea didn't work. She got her front legs through the neck hole, and then she was hung up, just standing there in the snow. Now she's got a wound dressing against her skin with a body warmer pack on top of that. The dressing is actually to keep the body warmer from burning her, and then the whole thing is wrapped with gauze and Coflex. She looks ridiculous. She looks like she had a C-section or something, but she's warm, and I don't feel guilty that she's strolling around the pasture. Can they eat? Can they drink? And are they clean? When you've done everything you should do, trust that it's enough. Percy really saved us, by the way. We covered the windows with plastic, stuffed towels against all the cracks, but we didn't leave any faucets dripping because Alex said the pipe that froze last year was wrapped and the foundation covered up, so it should be fine. It wasn't. One section of the pipe that runs to our main bathroom froze, and we wouldn't have known until tonight if I hadn't had to bathe Percy. Everything's connected. A duck flaps his wings in the polar vortex, and a water pipe stays intact. That's all I've got, kids. I've got some thinking to do about my involvement in the fiber world. I was really hopeful that I could make a positive difference for a lot of people, but I'm not so sure anymore. I do think I can still have a positive impact on my little piece of land. We have several hedges to lay before spring. If you're close by and interested in learning how to create natural livestock barriers that act as windbreaks and provide wildlife habitat, get in touch. As someone who got called out for practicing voodoo by drop spindling on Canal Street, I encourage you to have a warm and positive week and spin everywhere.